At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Her Spirit podcast. We've had a mini break, haven't we, Annie Emerson? How are you doing?
Excellent. Yes, excellent. All really good, apart from sleeping in a tent for 3 nights, you know, as you do with the kiddies. And we've been surfing and the dog's been surfing and we've had a great time. But no, it's good to be home. I'm looking forward to my bed tonight. Really looking forward to my bed.
I love that the dog has been surfing. I've been walking. I've been to the Lake District. I didn't know it very well at all, Annie. Gosh, it was stunning.
And did you open water swim, Lou?
Of course I did. Of course I went. Did I went to Windermere. Our next guest is laughing. We'll see whether she swims in a minute, shall we? She's very fast at running. I went to Windermere, which was windy, funnily enough, and I went in Rydal, and it was. I mean, it's so beautiful. And you know me, Annie, that's my absolute favourite thing to do. I went for about an hour or so in Rydal and it was just stunning, surrounded by the hills and just really kind of life-affirming in the way that I find swimming really can be. Do you want to do the introductions to our lovely guests or shall I do it?
Oh, I really don't mind. Should you heads or tails?
I'm doing it, Annie. Sorry. You didn't, you know, you've got to be faster.
I know with you, darling, if you're not there, you know, on it, you miss out.
Okay, well, I would probably be disqualified in the sport that we're mostly going to talk about, because I always go before, you know, they go 3, 2, 1, go. I go on the G of go as a swimmer. Anyway, let's introduce the wonderful Donna Fraser, 4 times Olympian. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You probably go on that G of go, the equivalent, wouldn't you, I suppose?
Well, actually, when I was training, my coach would say 3, 2, 1, so I'll go on the W. That was me.
Of course you would, because that's how you win, isn't it?
Definitely. But with these long legs, I had to preempt the gun almost and try not get disqualified, because of now, you know, it's the first out. If you go before the gun now, you're out. There's no 2 times of an opportunity. So, yeah, I wouldn't do very well, I think, now if I was competing.
Donna, how tall are you?
I'm 5'11", but I'm all legs. 36 inside leg.
Wow.
Oh my goodness, that is absolutely gorgeous. I always remember watching you, because I've always been a big athletics fan, and you just were so graceful with these, as you said, like incredibly long legs. So there'll be a lot of envious women out there listening to this, won't they? 36-inch legs. Can you imagine that? Buying trousers. Do you have to go somewhere extra, like a shop where they sell extra long jeans?
Well, when I was younger, there were a lot of issues. I would say that I was the invention of ankle swingers, because all my trousers were like that. So culottes was perfect for me. But then I've got quite skinny legs. Interestingly enough, when I'm sat down, I'm the same height as everyone. The minute I stand up, everyone's like, oh, you are tall. But yeah, I've got a little body. So you can imagine when it comes to buying clothes, it can be quite difficult. But now you've got quite a wide range of clothes for tall people that are not wide as well. So I'm doing okay now.
I used to have, Donna, and you will have the same thing, when back in the day when I was really small, you used to buy tights and you used to buy them by foot size.
Yes,
do you remember? So
yes.
I had a choice, because I've got, my legs are not as long as yours, but they're, you know, anyway, my problem was that you buy them in foot size and then it would be halfway down to my knees.
Yes.
Or if you managed to get them all the way up to the top of my legs, the foot, the ankle would, you know, the heel would come halfway up my leg. So you understand this. I've never talked about this to anybody else.
It's so true. And I'm not sure whether I can say this, but you'd have to put an extra pair of knickers over the tights to keep
yes!
them up.
Oh, Donna. Oh, we bonded over everything.
And, oh my God, I love
people
that.
People always say to me, don't complain about your long legs. I'm like, well, it had, you know, there
problems.
Are issues.
Completely, completely. I absolutely sympathise with you. I know where you're coming from. We can take this conversation offline.
Yeah, let's take that offline. Anyway, so you started, you were brilliant sport from a very young age. Was it always your passion?
Not really, actually. My sister, there's a 10-year age gap between myself and my sister, so I was the baby and she loved athletics. So it was always on the TV. And my parents are from St. Vincent and the Grenadines, so cricket was the thing. So I was always surrounded by sport. But then, of course, you want to aspire to be like your older sister, and I'd watch her run, and she didn't get as far as I did. But I thought, I want to follow in her footsteps, and she encouraged me to do so. But as I said, coming from a West Indian background, that wasn't the thing. It was like, well, athletics is not going to pay the bills. We want you to be a doctor or a lawyer or something along those lines. So trying to convince them to let me go down to the local club was a bit of a chore. But that's when you have older siblings to help you out a little bit. And they allowed me to go. And then the rest is history.
Well, you must have discovered fairly early on, you know, what a huge talent you had. Six-time schools champion. So from a young age, you were winning.
Yeah, I've got a photo of when I was 8 years old at my primary school where I was the youngest in the athletics team. So I was completely out of my comfort zone with the older girls, as you'd say. I was with the older girls. So I was proud to be part of that team. And that was, I was running 55 metres for my school, which is crazy to believe. But my primary school teacher, and I stayed in touch with them for such a long time. And it was her, Miss Hughes, that would say, Donna, just be determined. Do not look left or right. Just go straight ahead and go for it. And I always remember her saying, just be determined. And that stuck with me all the way through. So from the age of 8, that's when it kicked off.
Oh my gosh, that's absolutely adorable. And now you'd be like sort of 3 strides and you've done the 55 metres.
Absolutely. I mean, my event was 400 metres, I wouldn't mind. I could just about run 55 metres now.
I was going to say, I think, you know, what we've learned from doing these podcasts and a lot of amazing women that we've spoken to, there always seems to be one defining moment or one person, you know, quite early on that has made, you know, a big difference. Like with Kelly Holmes, it was her teacher who basically said, listen, stop mucking around. You can be someone if you want to be. And for you, you know, it's a teacher, it's a coach that's turned around and said, you know, just don't look left, don't look right, you know, and those things, it's amazing how they stick, isn't it?
Completely stick. And it's just funny that Miss Hughes, and I still call her Miss Hughes, which is really bizarre, would say be determined. And determination is one of the values within the Olympic and Paralympic movement. So again, those whole values have stuck with me throughout and can be transferred into the working world as well.
You talk about the working world because I was reading about you today and you were able to, well, you managed an incredible thing, sort of to have a full-time job and also be training as well. And you were, your employer was pretty amazing, weren't they?
Oh, my goodness. So I've worked throughout my entire athletics career. I first started out and studied tourism. But then in 1996, I made that decision to give up my full-time job and focus on my athletics because they wouldn't allow me to go part-time. And I was a full-time athlete for a year. And then I was approached by EDF Energy. They wanted to sponsor 5 athletes leading into the 2000 Olympics. So it was a 3-year cycle into those games where they supported us financially for those 3 years so we could prepare. And in those 3 years, they offered a part-time role as health and wellbeing manager within the organisation. And I was lucky enough to get that role. So they supported me to do that role as well as train. And that's the balance that any professional athlete needs to not only have the skills and knowledge in a career once you finish your sport, but also being able to give 110% to your sport. And they were brilliant. And I stayed with them for 19 years. So
wow, that is a really long time, isn't it? 19 years. You touched there or mentioned there that EDF were, chose you as one of the athletes to sponsor towards the 2000 Olympics, which obviously took place in Sydney. I was going to bring this up a little bit later, but now you've mentioned it. What a race. I mean, what a race to be in. One of the, well, the biggest ever 400-metre Olympic final. And an incredible performance from you, but obviously won by Kathy Freeman, who was at the time your training partner. Wow, that must have been tough for so many reasons.
Oh my goodness. I've been to four Olympic Games and everyone asked me which one was your best. And I always say all of them for different reasons. Obviously 2000 was the one that I did my absolute best at. It was my best performance, but at the time I didn't feel it was my best performance because you don't get medals for coming fourth. But leading up to that was a huge experience for me. My coach was, bless his soul, he passed away in 2015, but he was a bit eccentric. I was his first athlete he coached properly. So I was in a way a bit of a guinea pig. But leading into 2000, he connected with Kathy Freeman's coach, which I didn't know about. I was unaware. And I was at a competition and finished the race. And her agent at the time, who was involved in Australian athletics, approached me and said, "Oh, so you're, I can't do an Australian accent. You're training with Freeman." And I was like, "Oh, am I? Okay, yes, I am." And, you know, I rocked up at the track and I'll never forget. It was like it was yesterday. The first session, she was just a dot in the distance. She was just gone. I was so far behind. But my coach always say, "Donna, never show your weaknesses, even though you're knackered, just get up and keep going." But I just remember the pain I went through. But she taught me so much, and I realised that we put so many of our role models on pedestals, but at the end of the day, we're just like each other. You know, we're aiming to achieve the same things, but it's who wants it the most and who is willing to put everything on that line. And she did just that, especially with the pressures that she had. But yeah, it was an amazing experience to train with her. I learned so much, and at the same time didn't realise that gap was closing leading into the games. And I did not realise it. I was just trying to do my best session every time I stepped foot on the track with her. And I guess going into Sydney, again, I didn't realise how fit I was. I almost underestimated my own skills and ability. And the race at the end was a race I always, every time I watch it, I expect a different result.
Oh no, seriously?
Yes. I'm like, come on, Donna. It's like, come on, it's you.
How much further did you need?
Oh, I think that's the first time I wished it was 450 metres right, as opposed to 400.
The 55.
Yeah, the 55 would have been perfect. Either that or bigger boobs, one of them.
it was an emotional, night because in her victory lap, she carried both the Australian and the Aboriginal flag, didn't she?
She certainly did. And this is why she chose to train in the UK that year, to take away those pressures she would have had the minute she walked out of her door in Australia. So being in the UK, not many people would have known who she was. So she could just get on and do her thing. But she is so close to her roots and her culture that she wanted to do that. And you know, the Aborigines and her culture as a whole are held her in high esteem. And she's an amazing role model.
And she was the first Aboriginal person to win gold in the Olympics, wasn't she? It gives me goosebumps, actually, thinking about it.
Well, even now, when I see it on TV, the noise in that stadium was just absolutely deafening. But when you're on the track, I never heard a thing. You could have heard a pin drop. I just remember the gun going and seeing the flashing lights in the stadium. Nothing else apart from the finish where I hugged her. Obviously, I knew I was like, oh, my gosh, where did I come? I didn't even realise I'd come fourth at that stage. But, it was a night to remember.
Mm. A couple of, you know, lovely sort of lessons from what you've just said, you know, in that last little bit. And one is to, you know, not, you know, put people on pedestals, so to speak, because I guess you did exactly that and always thought that Kathy was better than you, and actually without realizing you were catching up, and in the end the final was so close. So I guess that's one lesson, to always believe that anything is possible. But I think one thing that I love about what you said, Donna, was that, you know, if you want to achieve things in life, they don't come easy, and you have to give it your all, because, you know, you've got other people out there just as competitive as you are.
Absolutely. And when I say that I learned so much from her, there were days, and you know, even after I stopped training with her, you turn up at the track and you feel dreadful. And I'm sure Louise can relate to this when she's doing her triathlons. And you think, you know what, no, there's someone else out there training and I want to be part of that. I don't want to give them that extra edge. And you're right, in terms of putting them on a pedestal, they are still human beings. Yes, we can have role models. Yes, we can have people we look up to. But at the end of the day, what bits and skills are you picking out from them that are positive to you, that can have an impact on you as an individual? And those qualities that she had, I learned so much from her, is that, you know what, I'm not leaving anything left on the track. I'm just going to give it my best shot and see what happens. But at the same time, you have to be mindful of yourself and your body, because you can go overboard and overtrain, and then that becomes an issue as well. But you're so right. You know, she was world best. She was the best in the world at the time. So to have that opportunity to train with the best in the world. And when I talk to youngsters, I always say, you know, if you're going to aspire to the absolute maximum, the optimal level you want to reach, then you have to associate yourselves with the best as well and learn those skills. Because if you just set your limits too low and just surround yourselves with that limit, then you're not going to go above that. So it was important for me to do that. I probably wouldn't have had that opportunity if my coach didn't see that that was a good move to make. So
Really interesting, I'm sure, for everybody listening as well, what you said about underestimating yourself, because that's a really important lesson as well, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is. And I did that in the final, if I'm completely honest. I was in lane 2 through the rounds. I was in lane 7 and 8, which a lot of 400 meter runners absolutely hate. And I loved it because I could focus on my own race. And I use the screens quite a lot. There are screens at both ends of the 400, so I could see what position I was in and use them to my advantage. But then in the final, being thrown in at lane 2 and seeing all the best athletes outside of me, as it were, and Kathy being one of them, silly me, having trained with her all summer, I should have just tagged on to her because I knew how she ran. I knew how she ran a 400. But I went the opposite and almost was cocooned myself, mindset, physically and mentally. Right, Donna, just don't think about anyone else. But was so unaware of what was going on around me that I didn't realise I was dead last in the race, you know. So I underestimated my own ability and didn't stick to the plan. That was not the plan. I went through 200 in 24 and a half, which is so slow for me. I could have done that. I was doing that repetitions in training with my eyes closed. And then come the final, I changed the plan. So if it's a lessons learned, stick to the plan. That's what training is about. You stick to the plan, irrespective of what's going on around you.
Mm. I think that's an extraordinary story. Since 2000, you've gone on to do a whole host of other things and just recently have been involved with UK Athletics in a new position. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so as I said, I was at EDF Energy for 19 years. I was in communications, that was my main field. And then I started to chair the BAME network, which is Black Asian Minority Ethnic Network, for a few years. And then I started to develop a passion for ED&I. And I always said I'd never go back to athletics, you know, once I'd given my whole life to the sport, I didn't want to go back. But then an opportunity came up for the ED&I lead, Equality, Diversity, Inclusion lead at UKA. And I was like, OK, I'm going for it. I'm going back to the sport that I love. And also at the same time doing the passion of mine, which is ED&I. And yeah, I've been in the role for 3 years, 3.5 years now, and that time's flown. So my main remit is all about the culture of the organisation and embedding the best possible behaviours that you should have, both as a sport and organisationally, into the organisation. And also we're aiming for the equality standard in sport, the advanced level. So that in simple terms, for people that don't know what that means, that's literally holding up a mirror to ourselves to see how we're operating through an ED&I lens as an organisation. So we're not perfect, we know that, but it's also an opportunity for us to identify the areas we're not good at and put interventions in place to make sure we're improving.
So Donna, that's equality, diversity and inclusion.
That's correct.
I don't know how much you want to talk about, you know, what do you think the biggest challenges are with that?
So I always say that athletics is probably the most diverse sport globally. We've got the gender balance there. You have male and female who can participate. We've got a para participation there. So the disability is covered and ethnicity as well. What we're not very good at is the representation inside the organisation. So that's where we need to improve. So for me, we need to represent the audience that we serve, and not only just the athletes, but the officials in terms of volunteers, society in general throughout the UK. So we are doing a huge amount of work in that space, and we're obviously funded by UK Sport. So there is a code for sport governance. And in that there, we have to have at least 30% women on boards. So there are targets in place and we're achieving that, which is great. But for me, I think we need to push those boundaries, because fine, women across sport, you know, we want participation of women. But I think it goes further than that. We should look at ethnicity. We should look at disability, especially within athletics. So we're doing a huge amount of work in that space as well to implement that.
And targets, in your view, make a difference?
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy and happy, because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Yes, and also, funny enough, we had a conversation the other day, the difference between targets and quotas. Now, quotas is something that you definitely need to have, yeah. But then it comes with probably some negative views that you end up just putting people in those positions just to make that quota, whether they have the skills or not, whereas targets are aspirational. You don't have to achieve them. So for me, I think if we're not doing well, and this goes back to that whole equality standard piece, then we need to put some targets and quotas in, so then we're working towards a better, more diverse organisation.
Mm. Can I ask you a quick question from a viewer? A viewer?
Yes.
We don't have viewers.
Listener.
It's because I'm looking at you on Zoom. Where are you? Where are you today?
I'm in London. I'm in the dining room because this is where all the light is. Yes.
you get the view today of my very messy kitchen, so apologies.
It's not messy at all. You haven't seen mine.
I saw Joe Wicks today. I don't know how much of Joe Wicks you've watched, but you know he has that like really pristine background. And then I said, and then we saw the other end of the room, which is a complete tip, which kind of cheered me up. Anyway, so what it was, well, it's a couple of questions. This is Sophie. She says, I really struggle with running. Any top tips? And Annie, you can also help with this. I struggle with running too. So yeah, Donna, struggling with running.
So struggling with running, I guess I can't have a direct conversation with her in terms of what is it, the breathing? Is it getting out and about, you know, because of our weather's awful. But I think what she's really asking is in terms of the ability to run and the technique. So my first advice to anyone who asks me this question is to get on the grass. That's number one tip. Because if you're running on the pavement, that can cause a lot of injury and damage because of the impact you're having on the surface. So, and also intervals. So run, walk, run, walk. So then you build up your pace and how far that you can run eventually. So it's just building, starting from small, that you're able to enjoy it and not kill yourself on the first session so you absolutely hate it.
Well, I think those are, you know, very smart tips, as we'd expect from Donna. Great advice, probably better than my advice. But I think that it's consistency is really key, because I think some people like the idea of running and the freedom of running, the ease of it, the cost of it. You know, it's not like you've got to have a membership or something like that. Totally agree with you, Donna, finding the right road surface, because if you're not used to running and you just hit those pavements and roads, you know, and particularly if you're starting running a little bit later on in life, so maybe you're not a teenager, you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s, you know, that finding softer ground is really good. But it's trying to build up consistency, because sometimes people do two or three runs and they'll go, oh, it's hard. Yes, it is hard, but the more you do of it, the easier it will become. So it's just trying to do it little and often. And always remember, when you don't feel like it, if you haven't really got a good enough excuse other than the fact you think, oh, I'm a bit tired, just think about how you'll feel when you're done it, because you will always regret not doing it, but you'll never regret doing it nine and a half times out of ten. That's Annie's advice. That's my advice.
No, totally agree. And of course, you know, it lets off all those endorphins. You certainly do feel better once you've finished, for sure. You might be sweaty, but it's worth it.
Another question. This is from Kerry. She says, I loved watching you run. How did you keep running at such a high level for four games? And you did four Olympic Games. It's so impressive.
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's only when I add it, I just see four and I think, yeah, it's just 4 years, but it's not, it's 16.
That's the point, isn't it?
Exactly, I do forget. So yeah, I think it's probably the fact that I set my goal from when I was very young, that I wanted to get to an Olympic Games and get a medal. And every time I got the knockbacks, the injuries, I just kept coming back, hence why I was labelled the grandma of athletics. I wouldn't retire.
I saw that. Yeah. I was upset on your behalf, but I probably shouldn't be upset on your behalf. You know, that's inspirational rather than anything else.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was like, no, I haven't got my medal yet. I'm going to keep going. But yeah, it was just that determination again, that I wanted to achieve so much more. And I knew I had so much more in me to give. And I think with any professional athlete, you know when it's time to hang up those spikes, you know within. And unfortunately, due to injury, illnesses, whatever that may be, that you're forced to quite often to give up. I did have injuries, but I still kept coming back because I was so determined to. So I guess also it's the support network I had, the inspirational people I had around me, my family, my friends, but also my coach, first and foremost. He was the one that always supported me. And when I wasn't able to train with my training partners due to injury and illnesses, that he always adapted the training sessions to make sure I kept involved and kept mentally strong as well.
You talk about being ill, but you had breast cancer, didn't you?
And then, I did,
and then went back for the 2012. I mean,
yeah, I know, crazy.
Talk us through it.
Yeah. So 2009 was an interesting year. It was the first year I decided to do 400 meters indoors. Now, indoors, for those that don't know, is a 200 meter circular track, not like outdoors where it's 400 meters. So for someone with long legs like me, getting lane 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is tough. It's quite tight. So I'd always beg that I'd have lane 6. So I decided to challenge myself and try it, and did okay. Got to the European Championships, got a relay medal. And then I thought, great, this is the inspiration I need to catapult me into the summer. And the May of that year was when I found the lump in my breast. And I thought, maybe it's because I'm training hard, or I'm a bit, you know, feeling a bit down. And I just literally followed all the advice that they tell you to keep an eye on it. If it changes, if it doesn't, after a few weeks or so, just go and get it checked out. And that's exactly what I did. And just cut a long story short, I had the lump removed in the June of that year. And literally 2 weeks later, I competed abroad in 100 metres. I know.
2 weeks?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I did. And that the lump itself went off for biopsy. So I didn't know at that stage.
So you didn't even know. And I mean, I just can't even begin Well, no, I can sort of begin to imagine the sort of the thoughts that you would be having.
Well, exactly. But again, this is where sport is so important for your mental state, because that is what kept me on track. And I had a focus. I knew where I was going. As I said, my support network. So I went and competed, but I was in agony because, of course, coming out of the blocks. And then went back for my results. And that was when they said to me that I've got early stages of breast cancer. So again, so many lessons and thoughts were going through my mind at that point to, you know, how could it be? No family history. You know, I've been fit and well, the fittest I could possibly have been. And at the same time, it really dawned on me how important it is to be body aware and know your body, because I say I'm one of the lucky ones, touch wood, that I caught it early enough. It didn't spread. But then the December of that year, I opted to have a mastectomy just because the conversations I'd had with the doctors in terms of it reoccurring later on in life. So I cut to the chase. That was the athlete mindset in me. Just get rid of it. I'm still me, you know, even though part of me has been taken away, I'm still Donna. So that's the message that I went into 2012 with.
But yes, yeah, so just, I mean, take us through that decision. So you decide that you've been through breast cancer and you want to go back for the home games.
Yeah, so that was 2009. So literally during my recovery in 2010, I thought I need to do more with this. So that's how I got connected with Now, Breast Cancer Now.
Yeah.
And I'm an ambassador for them. And it was more so to tell my story to women that, you know, just to be body aware, irrespective of how fit you are, whether you've got family history or not, and tell my story, basically. But also for those women from an ethnic minority background as well, who would often see breast cancer as taboo to talk about and not want to go to the doctors and get themselves checked out. So that's how I got involved. But yeah, then I made that conscious decision because no one knew apart from my immediate family and my coach why I retired. And they were like, why is she coming back to do more training? She's retired, because I retired at that point. And I was like, okay, I just want to do this. I feel I've got more to offer. And then the night of the trials for the Olympics, I announced it to the newspapers and they ran the story before the heats, and I was on the line, and by then everyone would have read the papers, and I was in tears on the start line because I had a standing ovation.
Oh,
I was
surprised.
I don't cry that easily, but I did. I thought, how the hell am I going to get around this 400 meters? So it was a very emotional journey, but the fact that I told my story, I wanted to inspire other women and men who also get breast cancer as well.
Again, this is Double Goosebump podcast today.
Oh, my goodness.
You talk about inspiring and you talk about role models, and I cannot think of a more powerful thing to have done than have stood on that start line. And also for people to know as well at that point is just so staggering.
Yeah, and that's why I did it. I knew it would have been a big ask for me to make the Olympic team. Obviously, I was going to give it my best shot, but I'd been out of the sport for a number of years. Not only that, I was older and the event had moved on somewhat, but I just wanted to just do something and be visible. And it wasn't to raise my profile. It wasn't about that, but just to make a statement and how important it is to be body aware, because had I left it, I don't know if I would be talking to you today.
Gosh, you're my hero.
Oh, bless you. You're mine. I track you. I see you doing all your thing.
Oh, Annie.
What's interesting, I think, Donna, is what we all found, and all the women that we've had in our podcast, and certainly myself and Louise, is the whole thing about sport and mental health. So whilst you'd had, you know, a pretty tough diagnosis, and, you know, I'm sitting here going, oh, how does anyone cope with that? Anyone? And we know that there are thousands of people going through it. But it would appear, number one, that your sport was really important for you in terms of being able to recover and to remain strong. But on that note, the question, and one of our listeners, Jane, asks, how do we get more women from Black and Asian communities active, which we know that it's an area where not enough women are getting involved in sport. And I guess that's a cultural thing as much as anything. But I think you yourself will absolutely put your hands up and say, you know, one of the most difficult times in my life, that helped me. And you don't have to be a four times Olympian to do sport to feel better about yourself. You can do it on, you know, a much lower level as well, right?
You've hit the nail right on the head there, Annie. Absolutely. I always say that probably if I wasn't an athlete, it would have been a big struggle. Even my care nurse who went through the journey with me, my sister was by my side for most of my my sessions and my appointments. And even Julie, I remember her to this day, she said to my sister, pulled her to one side. She said, is Donna okay? Because she's so upbeat with everything. And like, no, that's how she is. That's how she deals with it. You know where we are. That can't change. We can't change the past. Let's look forward and just work with that and see what happens. So that whole athlete mindset absolutely helped me through it, because you have bad races. You can't change that. You can only learn from it, and what you do next will make that difference. So absolutely, that sporting mind, that can do attitude at any level can help and transfer into daily life and in business, whatever you're doing. It's just as simple as you look out the window and see it's awful weather. Oh, do I go for a bike ride? Actually, yes, I need to go out and do this bike ride. Absolutely, for sure. So you're absolutely right in that respect. And in terms of picking up around the whole diversity and women, especially from an ethnic background, getting involved in sport, this is where role models is absolutely important. And I always say, and I say to my fellow athlete friends, that we have a responsibility now. Now we're not competing. We have a responsibility to be those role models, because we've transferred from being elite to being an everyday person, as it were, working, got families, doing all that kinds of things. We should be telling our stories and what we're doing to be visible and role models. Not saying that we're superhuman. We're absolutely not. We go through the same issues as everyone else, but it is that mindset that gets us through all those ups and downs that everyone has in life, and how to overcome them and put some things in place to help you get through.
So you are a role model. What about your role models? Did you have a particular person who you looked up to apart from Kathy?
My mum is an amazing woman. She had me fairly late. She had me in her 30s. And just because she came over to this country in 62, not knowing what she was coming to. My dad was already here to set up home, but the struggles they both went through to achieve and provide for us as a family, and the whole racism that they experienced, and the low paid jobs that they had to go for because they didn't have those opportunities. So they instilled a lot of resilience in me and my siblings. And again, that can-do attitude. My dad had all girls, but he treated us like boys. You know, I know you can't say that now, but back then, you know, it was like, you should be able to change a plug. You should be able to be independent, all of that. So my parents, absolutely. And then my sister, who got me into athletics in the first instance, who drove me here, there and everywhere to achieve what I did. But she, in herself, she started off as a dental nurse and is now a lawyer. So that whole transition, taking that leap of faith to do something she wants to do. So she absolutely is my role model, without a doubt. And then my coach, who supported me, even though he's male, but it doesn't matter.
I was going to ask you if she drove you about as well. And what about your mum, kind of looking at, I mean, it's difficult to say this being her daughter, but she must be incredibly proud of what you've done.
Yeah, she is. It's so funny. As a youngster, as I said, you know, they weren't too keen on me doing sport because it, you know, then it wasn't really professional. But now she will talk forever and a day about what I've done and what her kids have done in different fields. But yeah, she's like, yeah, this is the runner. She'll always introduce me as this is the runner, because they'd, like, yes, I'm Donna, you know, I'm Donna. But yeah, they are extremely proud. And to be fair, that's why I do what I do, to make them proud, because I know the sacrifices they made when they came over here in the 60s for me to pave the way. So I I always think about them and make them proud. And I've got goosebumps now.
Oh, let's talk a little bit about what you've been up to in lockdown as well, because the stats for women in lockdown and exercise have been bad, haven't they? What is it? Less than 30% of women during COVID are active enough for a health benefit, a big drop in women being active. I see you shaking your head.
Oh, yeah, it's... No one saw this coming. It's been a challenge for everybody. I usually go to St. Lucia every year to deliver some boot camp sessions at a health and wellbeing resort. And that got cancelled because of COVID-19. And I sat in the house and thought, I need to do something. Of course, I can go out for a run and do my own thing in the house. But we've got a WhatsApp group on my street. So I posed the question, would they want to do some street workouts during lockdown? And the WhatsApp just blew up. And they're like, yes, please, yes, please, yes, please. Because again, they didn't know who I was. You see people, you say hello and morning and so forth. But I said, I'm a four-time Olympian. I do know what I'm doing, just to make sure. And I delivered... we called them Wordsworth workout sessions for my neighbours, of course, observing social distancing. And they loved it. And it was just so great to see. You know, we did the Clap for Carers every Thursday night as a community, as a street. But it was the workouts that really brought my street together. You know, we still talk on WhatsApp and it was all ages, women, kids. Those who don't even do exercise, was just phenomenal. So I'm really proud that I was able to give something back to my community.
And I love, Annie, before you ask a question, I love that they didn't know who you were. Oh, hi, I just happened to be a four-times Olympic. We have been to four Olympics and all the rest of it. I love that.
Yeah, I get that from my mum. She'd always tell me, Donna, don't be too boastful. You know, the same people you're meeting on the way up, the same people you meet on the way down. So just be kind and just be you.
I think I want to meet Donna's mum. She sounds absolutely lovely. And I think, you know, as Lou said, she must be so proud of you. What you did there was absolutely amazing, you know, setting up this kind of, you know, community street workout. What a brilliant thing to do, and very giving as well, because I think, you know, in these times, you know, people can be very wrapped up in themselves, and sometimes actually putting stuff out there and giving back kind of makes you feel even better about yourself. But I think going back a little bit to how we bring more Black, Asian, ethnic minority into doing sport is something we've talked a lot about on this podcast, is why we do sport. And, you know, a lot of the time it's presumed that it is about, you know, making our bodies look better, which actually over the last few months we've discovered for a lot of people it's not that. You know, it runs far deeper than having the 10 out of 10 body or whatever it is, bikini body. You know, for me, yes, you know, vanity, a little bit of vanity comes in, particularly as you get older, that you want to stay toned and stuff. But for me, it's the headspace. If I don't go running, this grey cloud comes over my head, and it might only just be a 30 minute run. And I think that's what we've got to teach people, isn't it? You're not actually exercising. Yeah, yes, it does help. It does help if you need to lose weight or whatever, but it really is about your mental state and so many other things other than just kind of losing weight or having the perfect body, whatever that may be.
Absolutely, Annie. And this is something that I put in the for the street workouts, that this is, I'm not going to expect you to be Olympians to participate. It's not about that. It's just getting yourselves moving, getting out of the house, even though it's just to your gate, and participating. And one lady who participated really hit home for me. She was 72. And she's been messaging me still to this day saying, you know, I miss your sessions, because we thought that, you know, now things are getting to some back to some normality, that it's run its course, but they still want them, believe it or not. But you're so right. It was just getting out and seeing other people and moving. And you don't have to be Olympic level to get out and moving, but just that feel good factor that you feel that you've done something. And for me, that's what mattered.
That 72-year-old lady, had she been doing exercise before, or was this kind of a new thing for her?
The majority didn't do anything whatsoever. And even yesterday I asked for some testimonials because I want to take this a bit further as well now. And the majority of them said, you know, I never did anything before. Now I've got the bug. I want to do something in my own home and I'm trying to keep up with it. And it's the motivation as well that they wanted from me, which I can give. I can do Zoom calls and do all of that. But now they've got the bug, as it were, the exercise bug, which I think is just brilliant that they want to continue it. And you know, not Natalia, the 72-year-old lady, she couldn't do everything, but I always try to find alternatives for her that she could do. A lady had arthritis, again, find alternatives that she could do and still feel part of that session. So no one was excluded whatsoever. And this is the thing, we have to think about ways, and whether that's cultural barriers that are there, look at those to make sure that sport is inclusive for everyone, no matter what ability that, you know, whether you, even if you have a disability, there are ways to get you involved. There's no excuse.
It's really interesting because that's another thing we've learned. And we started this podcast, we were going to do one a month, and pretty much until last week, we've done one every week because it's become part of a community. And that's one of the things that's been really clear in the podcast and on the Her Spirit app as well, that being part of a community in this space, as it were, let's call it moving, is really important to people and can really make a big difference.
Absolutely. And this is why I'm so excited to be part of the Her Spirit movement, as it were. You know, this the advisory group, both from an athlete perspective and also with my ED&I hat on as well, which is absolutely important to me.
I know we've got to let you go in about 3 minutes because you've got an advisory meeting, haven't you?
Yes, my first one.
Oh, what about your kind of everydayness exercise? Do you still exercise? What do you choose to do?
Yeah, so a friend of mine, another Olympian, she, this whole lockdown thing, she's transformed herself. She's lost 12 kilos. That was, I know, she's done it. She's a bit crazy in that respect. Once she sets a goal, that's it. She'll do everything. So she's... Actually, for a change, I'm on the receiving end. She's been delivering circuit sessions Monday, Wednesday and Friday mornings. And it's so funny. I don't moan at the best of times, but I have to check myself and think, right, OK, Donna, you're in athlete mode. Let's just do this. And even I've lost 3 kilos. So, yeah, it's that's what I've been doing to stay fit. But the fact that I'm working from home, it gives me another outlet. And you're not leaving the house to go to meetings like I normally would. I'm stuck in the house. This is my environment. So I look forward to those morning sessions. And then also I get out and about and do the odd run. I don't go for 30 minutes. That's further than 400 meters. So forget that.
can I ask you, I'm going to name drop now. I once talked to Paula Radcliffe about her running. And when she was running outside, did she always have to overtake people? Do you always have to overtake people?
Yes, I do. And I try and do the odd park run. And I always think, Donna, you're just doing this for you. But I've got that mentality. I can't help it. Especially if I see a dog and a buggy in front of me. That's a no-no. That's an absolute no-no. I go into overdrive, yeah. And I'm like, right, come, catch them. Yeah, so it is ingrained in us. We can't change.
What about you, Annie? Are you the same?
Oh, my goodness. Listening to Donna there talking about buggies and people running with buggies. I was on one of my sub-3-hour marathon attempts in Abingdon in Oxford, and I'd gone really well. And as typically happened for me 4 times before I eventually did it, 90 miles, I thought, bloody hell, the wheels are coming off again. I'm struggling, thinking I can still do it, but kind of knowing it wasn't going to happen. And then this guy runs past me pushing a buggy, going for sub-3 hours. He's going, come on, you can come with me. Well, I have to say, normally, like you two are, I'm really positive, but at that moment I just went, I'm done. I'm really done. but in park run, you get plenty. Yeah, there was a baby in the buggy. I know it's embarrassing. It wasn't embarrassing because the guy was incredibly fit. Even in park runs, you'll get plenty of sub 20 minute 5K runners. So Donna, you know, just don't lose heart, okay?
I can't help it. It's in my blood. The competitiveness never leaves me. Even walking to the station, if someone's there, I'm thinking, I'm going to catch them. That's my goal. I always set these. It's ridiculous. They have no idea what I'm thinking, but I think, oh, yeah, I've passed you now. I've got one over you.
Are there people on these runs, Donna, that you come past and then they try and catch up with you as well? Presumably there are.
Well, the interesting thing is my first park run I did, I thought, oh, yeah, I'm in a different environment here.
Smash this.
And someone came up to me, you're Donna Fraser, aren't you? And I was like, oh, great. Now I have to try and run fast. And it was like, are you serious? So it doesn't definitely leave you, but yeah, I'm always thinking, oh well, I'll pass that person, make sure they don't pass me now. So you can see it, you do see it.
Oh, I think it's absolutely lovely. I think we'll end on that note because you've got a really important meeting to go to.
I have indeed. So, I could talk to you all day.
Oh, I know. Well, so you're on the Her Spirit Advisory Board. Thank you very much for doing that. Thank you for being an absolutely awesome guest, honestly.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to call you the Goosebump
Brilliant.
Guest.
Brilliant. Thank you, Donna.
Oh, it's been lovely. Hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Yeah, we will do. We absolutely will do. Thank you very much indeed. Take care.
You too.
And we'll speak soon.
Bye.
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 Bye. Annie, I mean, we've had some amazing podcasts, but there's something about Donna that just really, as I say, twice or at least three times in that podcast, she gave me goosebumps.
I think what I learn from people like Donna is something we can all take from it is that natural generosity. I love that when people are really happy and want to support others, which I think is, she says it's like a calling now to be involved, to get other people involved in support, in sport, to support other people. You know, and she's been through some tough times. You know, she's had a great career and actually could have talked a whole lot more about it. She's won huge amounts of medals and obviously four Olympics. And she's an amazing woman, and Louise is doing her best to distract me, aren't you, darling? Well, I'm trying to have a very serious chat with you.
I know, you're doing so well, everybody. Well, you're saying lovely things about Donna, rightly so, but you're being very well not to be distracted by my dog Ruby.
But this is where we're still at, isn't it? We're still at in sort of, you know, sort of lockdown. Well, we're not in lockdown because everyone's out and about now, more or less. But you know, social distancing's still in place. But we're on our Zoom call, on our weekly Zoom call, so we're chatting and get to see one another's homes and lives and children and animals.
Let me read some of the messages. Oh, thank you again for your messages. We'd love you to leave a rating if you want to, a review. We do read them, don't we, Annie? Justine, who's on the Her Spirit community, says, and thank you for this, Justine. You know, I really appreciate your thoughts. She says, I'm a bit behind with the podcast, but I'm listening to Kelly Holmes talking so openly about her breakdown and self-harm. It has actually really moved me and made me quite emotional. What Kelly says is so powerful and rings so many bells for me, especially when she talks about how it is when you're in a dark place. You are a truly awesome podcast. Thank you, Her Spirit. I didn't mean to read that last bit because I don't like to boast, a bit like Donna. But thank you, Justine. It's obviously really touched a note for you, that Dame Kelly podcast. And thank you to all our guests as well and everybody who's listened. I forgot, Annie, because we've had a week off. And I know I love chatting to you, but you know, I missed it, actually. I missed our chats.
Oh, I've really missed them. And I just like the guests. And when you actually read like reviews like that from Justin, and you realise that you're sort of helping in a way. You're helping make times for some people which are really hard, and that's just great to hear. It really is, Justin. So lots of love from all of us here at Her Spirit to you.
Right, I'm inspired by Donna. I'm going to go for a run, possibly a swim as well, and hopefully, fingers crossed, if we find a guest, we'll speak next week, Annie.
Oh, we'll be back next week for sure.
Take care in the meantime. Bye-bye, lovely.
Bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Burry and I'm the co-founder of Her Spirit. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast and we hope you found it useful. I'd just like to say thanks to our sponsors, Medichex, who without their support, this wouldn't have been possible. Medichex offers simple to use blood tests. Wanting to strengthen your immunity or check for underlying conditions, they offer a home test with doctor's reviewed results. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. And remember, together we've got this. Have a great day.